We have this idea of the observable universe, and that's the sphere of what we can see. And we kind of get this facade that we can see the whole observable universe. But in fact, there's a significant fraction of it that is not visible because we live inside of a galaxy, which means in order to see a considerable portion of the universe, you would need to be able to see through the Milky Way, which we can't. There's an entire wedge of the observable universe, which is permanently out of sight to the Earth, because it's always going to be obscured by the whole galaxy.
Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Gumption. I'm your host, Lil, and this is the podcast for dreamers and doers that helps you become the main character of your own life. What a crazy week it has been with the Ides of March, St. Patrick's Day, and of course, Kate Middleton, nowhere to be found. I don't always talk about pop culture on the show, but if you want to hear the best coverage of that royal situation, you should check out Pop Apologist Podcast. I've been a huge follower of them ever since they started, and they've recently just surpassed 200,000 followers just by covering this story. Also, during my freelance era, I was able to work directly with them to create a deep dive for their Instagram story, and they were so nice, just like they are on the show. Anyway, we've got an amazing episode for you guys today. Anybody who knows me knows I am a huge astrophysics nerd, as it has been a lifelong interest of mine. And I'm so honored to have on three of the smartest and funniest people I know from my time as an astrophysics major. When I tell you they got me through the trenches, I mean it. So please welcome Grace Kyoto, Connor Larson, and Kevin Mopazita.
Hello, Gumption. My name is Grace, and I wanted to introduce myself on here as Vermont's number one Gumption fan. I bring
Oh.
news to Vermont, and yeah, so I'm proud to be Vermont's number one Gumption fan. Happy to be here.
I can confirm that there's not a lot of pings on the Vermont section of my listener map. So, Grace, I have no doubt that those are you, and that makes me so happy because
Of
I like to
course, of
have
course.
representation all across the globe.
Kevin said he
Okay.
wanted to introduce himself next.
It's me, Kevin, Brooklyn's mayor, unofficial mayor. Till I start my political campaign. Yeah, this is my first time on a podcast. Yeah, I don't know why I had to think about it. Like, it definitely is. So, but yeah, I'm happy to be here, reuniting with all the geysers.
Kevin, I was going to ask you about this because you said when I texted you guys that it's like a bucket list thing to be on a podcast. Tell us about that and why that's a dream, because that's fun.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen so many clips on YouTube, even TikTok, just people going on podcasts speaking, and it could be the most randomest topic, it'll switch up really quickly. And I always thought that seemed fun. So I'm like, oh, what if I just go over there and speak my mind, the horrors of my mind, or, whatever it is.
Well, we welcome the horrors of your mind on the show. All right, Connor.
I can't be the only one that doesn't. I'm Connor. I can, I guess, proudly say that I'm like Lily's self-proclaimed male twin. I'm currently at the University of Delaware in their astrophysics PhD program, and I'm super excited to be here with my fellow Villanova friends. That's all you need to know for this podcast. That's all the gumptioners. Is there a term for a gumption fan?
So I've been struggling with like a term that doesn't sound totally idiotic because somebody suggested gumptioneers and I was using that for a while, but
That was not bad.
it's not bad. I'm still trying to find, as Frank Maloney would say, the Goldilocksian term to refer to my followers, but we haven't found it yet. So maybe gumptioners is better than gumptioneers. I'm not really sure.
To the gumptioners or gumptioneers.
I think we should say how we met. I guess I'll just start by saying we all studied astrophysics in college. I didn't make it all the way through. I ended up changing my path like halfway. But I would say the first 2 years at Villanova, the amount of time that we spent together was slightly concerning, but also foundational for me. It's cool that you guys are all on together because the three of you have like a special bond that like lived on past my friendship in that group.
I have something to add about how we met Lily. So Lily and I were destined to meet. Like, obviously we were going to meet through our major. We were also on the same floor. But we met at the random social the first night of our freshman orientation, which is so crazy because we were obviously going to meet at some point. And it's just crazy that that's how we met. And I think you have another side to that story. Weren't you like looking for some? I don't know. I feel like you were like going
Yes.
on this hunt
Wait.
for something.
I literally lost my phone and we just ran into each other and you were helping me look for it. And then literally the next day we figured out we were in the same major and we were just like, what is
We had
going
no
on?
idea. We had no idea it was coming our way. It was crazy.
If the universe was like, if you guys were destined to meet, I feel like me and Kevin, at least for the first couple months, were like anti-destined to meet because we were both in the same Calc 1 class. And not only that, but Kevin sat in the row directly in front of me. And for like the first, all the way up until Green Bank, I don't think we ever talked at all. Like it
That
would
was like
literally just.
when, like October, November, so like
Yeah.
3, 4 months went by without saying like a single word, just like passing
Yeah,
by like 3 feet like behind me.
it pretty much be passing back a worksheet and just be like, thanks. And that was it for months. And then after Green Bank, that's when we all kind of met Kevin.
I actually remember some of the really early days in our classes where Kevin, you were just like vibing on your own, like silently, and we were all like, we want to be friends with him. And then it just kind of naturally happened.
Back at that time, looking back at it now, I was definitely more introverted than I am now. I wasn't about going up to random people and be like, oh, my name is Kevin. I'm an astronomy major at Villanova. What's your name? That was not me at that time. And
What, you
even
mean like me? That's what I did.
now, like, I feel like your personality works for you, though. You know, you like seem more approachable. I don't know if I have that same vibe or, you know, that appearance. You can just like easily come up to me and, like, you know, happy go lucky, just have a conversation like that. But I feel like I'm better at it now. But yeah, at that time, like, definitely not.
I think we should talk a little bit about Green Bank before we get into other stuff too, because I have mentioned Green Bank on the podcast before. I had Sean Volpe on a while ago, and he was not an astro major, but he went to Green Bank. So I briefly explained it, but I think we should explain it from the perspective of what we were actually supposed to be doing there, in addition to all the random that we did. It's kind of a cool concept. Like, it was a really unique opportunity that I didn't realize how rare it was, I guess. I want Connor to speak on it because I feel like you got the most out of it from the astro perspective.
Well, I think the obvious part about what makes Green Bank amazing is the dark sky spot. So it was the first dark sky spot I'd been to. And like actually seeing the night sky for like what it actually truly is remarkable. And I get, you know, you hear it's like, oh, it's stars. It's like, yeah. But like it really is crazy. Being into astronomy forever, even I was blown away by seeing that. But then also seeing the instruments, like when you actually see how big the Green Bank telescope is, it's like, whoa. And yeah, the fact that that's an actual science instrument, that's something that studies galaxies and stuff that are billions of light years away, it's insane that it even operates and is that big. And then, in the sense that it's just awesome to experience that with all of us together. We hadn't been into like the thick of it at that point, like, we hadn't gone through OMPLAB and all that stuff yet, but it kind of felt like that's where a lot of bonding came with all the people in that major.
I agree. And even the professors that come on the trip, it's just kind of fun to see your teacher out of the school element and like just being goofy and having fun and eating meals together. Like, it's so rare and it's so cool.
The other thing about the Green Bank telescope, I guess, just to mention a size comparison, is they told us it was the size of a football field, the disc of it, right? And I don't know, that just puts it into perspective for people who haven't seen it. That's what really blew my mind about it, the size of that disc.
I think something crazy too is like seeing it move, because it's one thing to look at something that huge just stationary, but then when you actually see it, it's on wheels, you know, it rotates, the panels shift around to get the radio, but it's really just incredible. It's massive and you can control it based on what kind of data you want to collect, but it's insane. And I feel like Green Bank has a very Stranger Things kind of atmosphere. It feels like a weird secret scientific facility, even though it's still actively in use. The old telescopes being there that have been retired, it's so haunting.
Totally. And we didn't have any cell service or anything. It's a radio quiet zone. So that just adds a whole nother layer of things, like no communication with anyone outside of the Green Bank area. So you were literally in your own world there. and it felt unreal. And like what Connor was saying, I hadn't seen the Milky Way before. So to see that for the first time, to be completely separated from the rest of the world, it is just a really unique experience.
It's so rare that that kind of thing is possible now with all the different technology that we have. I sound like such a boomer saying that, but it's true. You just don't have a lot of scenarios where you are somewhere and you're not surrounded by phones or computers. It was cool to bring like disposable cameras. And it's not cool when your van gets stranded and you have to push it back in the freezing cold, but that's the downside.
We're like an ad for Green Bank right now. This is great.
No, literally not sponsored. We love you, Green Bank. Can they get podcasts there? I don't even think they can. I don't know.
Make sure to protect the data.
I think we'll just go around and say our favorite astro fact or a thing that you really found interesting when we were learning about it. I'll go like second or third.
We'll build the suspense. Yeah. Kevin.
Well, it's not really astronomy, but it's definitely physics related. So I think it was in Besson's class. Shout out Besson. Besson was the dog.
Oh, yeah.
But in Besson's class, I remember they just casually dropped the fact that everything around us, or like everything we perceive, is in the past, and nothing you see is in present time. And even though, like you won't ever be able to tell, because that's how quick light travels between whatever your cornea or your eye, that still blew my mind. I'll never see anything how it is in that present moment. I mean, you could be moving, but I'm seeing you move how you did a ridiculously small amount of time ago. And that's what I always tell people when they ask me for like a cool fact. It's just that, yeah, I'm always going to see you in the past. You're always going to see me in the past. You'll always see everything in the past.
I remember when we were learning about distances between celestial bodies, and I think it's 8 minutes from the Earth to the Sun. Like, if the Sun were to explode, which it won't anytime soon, it would take us 8 minutes to find out on Earth. I was just like, that's crazy. Imagine whatever stupid thing you're doing in those 8 minutes, and then all of a sudden it's game over. That's a good one, Kevin. I like that one.
For astronomy, I like a lot of the like taking super simple, seemingly obvious questions and then thinking about them in a different way. And one of the first times this happened in our astronomy major was definitely, why is the sky dark? Connor, why are you looking at me like that?
Oh, that was
Kevin.
only to me. It was Kevin sending me messages in the Zoom
You're
chat.
like shaking your head at my whole explanation. I'm like, oh
No, I'm not. I thought Kevin
my
said that to everyone.
God. Okay. Anyways, so take something
Sorry.
like, why is the sky dark? Well, most people would be like, obviously, it's dark at night, the sun's not in the sky, whatever. But it's actually because of the expanding universe and expansion of space-time. It was known as Olber's paradox. And basically, the logic behind it is like, if the universe at the time was thought, this is like pre-1800s, was thought to be just a static universe, uniform static universe. And if that was the case, then you were supposed to be able to look at any point in the sky and just have it end up being a light source. And there's a whole bunch of like different nuances to this, but that's kind of essentially what it says. Then Hubble later realized that there's the expanding universe and that things are moving away from us, which then affects the wavelength of light that we perceive. And we can only see like such a small part of the entirety of the electromagnetic spectrum. So the light's getting shifted into wavelengths we can't see. And I don't know, that blew my mind because it's just weird to think we are not actually seeing so much of the universe. And kind of goes on to what Kevin was saying about how there's so much that we don't see. We're looking to the past. We can't see so many different forms of light. So that was crazy. And then it's also just crazy that something as simple as why is it dark at night has all these like cosmological implications and underlyings to it. I'm a sucker for cosmology, so that's my fact.
I love that one, Grace. And I have like a vivid memory of when we started learning about the observable universe, because
Oh my
that
God,
also blew
yeah.
my mind. I think it was Fitz who drew the diagram. It was a sphere. And just thinking about potentially, like, there's all this out there that we have no idea what is past our own ability to observe. That is just a mind fuck, like, for sure.
I can follow up on that point too. This wasn't my cool fact, but I think this is crazy too. We have this idea of the observable universe and as the sphere of what we can see. And we kind of get this facade that We can see the whole observable universe. But in fact, there's like a significant fraction of it that is not visible because of the fact that we live inside of a galaxy, which means in order to see basically a considerable portion of the universe, you would need to be able to see through the Milky Way, which we can't, which means essentially there's like an entire half, or maybe it'd be more accurate to say an entire wedge of the observable universe, which is permanently out of sight to the Earth because it's always going to be obscured by the whole galaxy. I think that's cool. Like, not only is there this whole idea that there's a whole universe out there that's hasn't even had enough time to reach us, but there's a whole portion of the universe that even is accessible to us that is just blocked out because literally there's like a brick wall in front of it and we just can't see it.
And yet we see so much, which is crazy to me.
It's a little weird working in this field still. A lot of the craziness somewhat gets diluted because you just see it every day. But what still blows my mind is the scale of everything. And this is kind of talked about already. But yeah, so like the example I always give, and I wrote down some numbers because I can't remember, is like the Voyager space probes. They were launched in like the 70s. And there's some metric that says that a bit ago, they had officially exited the solar system. That definition is kind of iffy, but you could say that. So it took them 40, 50 years to do that, and it will take them another 18,000 years to reach the nearest star. So the jump from just out of the solar system to the next star is absurd. It stretches your mind to the point where even working in this field, almost impossible to comprehend the scales at play when you talk about astronomy.
It's so abstract. Even though you have the numbers to back it up, it's like, how do you conceptualize that? I will share my favorite astrophysics fact, but let me pull my notes up because I don't want to butcher it since I'm a little bit farther out of the industry now. My favorite has always been spaghettification. Yes, that is a real term. I, first of all, think that astronomers are hilarious, and a lot of the time their sense of humor comes into play when naming different things, but this phenomenon is basically what happens if you were to get sucked into a black hole. Well, not just you, it could be a galaxy or a planet or something getting sucked into a black hole. It's caused by the strong gravity. And so when something is falling into a black hole, it's basically stretched infinitely and compressed at the same time. Yeah, anyway, they call it spaghettification because you essentially would turn into this infinitely long piece of spaghetti until you just disappear. I just think that is hilarious, but it also would be excruciatingly painful should a human ever be in that situation. And it's funny because when you Google search spaghettification, the first question that comes up is spaghettification survivable? It's like, no, it's not. Like, who would ask that? But the answer says literally nothing can survive spaghettification, not even spaghetti. Come on now.
Yeah, I don't even know if you would survive the trip to being spaghettified. Like, I think your corpse might just get spaghettified.
Yeah, I always was super interested in like space time as a dimension. When you start to think about things in relation to space time and not just like physical distance or time separately, it just changes everything. It's very interesting. So I like thinking about the distortions and all that fun stuff, but yeah, mine is spaghettification. We can talk a little bit about the solar eclipse. I want to share what it actually is. I don't think most people know what's actually happening besides, you know, the basic principle of what an eclipse is. This is not one that occurs super frequently. And because the path of totality is crossing over North America, which is where we happen to be located, the stars feel like they're aligning.
Astrophysicist Connor, shed some light.
Sure. The basic idea of an eclipse is pretty easy to get, at least a solar one. So it's just that the moon happens to drift in its orbit in between the sun and Earth. And that's why it drifts in front of the sun and it blocks out part of the light of the sun. What you mentioned, though, is that this is a rare one. It leads to the question of, like, well, why doesn't this happen every month or so? Because that's around how long the moon's orbit is. And that's just because it's very, very slightly inclined, or the moon's orbit is very, very slightly inclined with respect to the Earth-Sun orbit. So they're not perfectly lined up. So it actually takes a long time for the chances when it drifts in front of the sun that it is just in line with the Earth and sun. A lot of times it's a little too high and a little too low, and you never get that perfect alignment there.
The next one isn't until, or at least in the continental United States, the next one is 2044. So that just kind of shows how
Oh,
unique
wow. So it's
that.
20 years from now. That's
Yeah, at
crazy.
least in the continental US. But yeah, so go out and
Wow.
see it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, I think, around 3:15 in the afternoon here. So like all these businesses are letting people out early to go see it, and there's watch parties. It's also opening day for the Guardians, which is really funny to me, the
Gonna be
eclipse.
pitch black in the middle of the game for like 2 minutes.
Yeah. I also wanted to talk about lunar eclipses because I remember when we were freshmen at Villanova, we had an eclipse, the one that was red. We did some astrophotography in the telescope, and the fact that we were able to photograph it through high quality equipment was really, really cool.
Well, it's called what, like a blood moon or something?
They give all those weird names to moons, right? There's like harvest moon and
Yeah, there's
I
like the
don't know,
blue
pumpkin
corn
moon,
moon or
and
whatever.
I don't know if red moon actually is that or if that's something else. But it is really reddish, brownish when you see it. And yeah, I still have those pictures somewhere too. I think one of them was my background for a while.
I remember people were so upset at me when I told them that the pink moon wasn't actually pink, and I had to let a lot of people down when I explained that.
I know the knowledge that you have. We get disillusioned by all these different things when you learn what's actually happening from a physics standpoint, and then you have to disappoint everyone else by being like, actually, no, this is what's happening. I remember learning about sunsets too, and why they're typically red and orangish color, because the way the light is moving through the atmosphere, something about the wavelength
Oh,
that.
that was good. That's a good one. It's simple things like a sunset that you don't realize how much physics and astronomy is really behind them. It's literally just everywhere.
It's really cool how it affects your daily life, and especially once you start thinking about it that way. I found, especially when we were in cosmology, I was looking at the world very differently when we were learning all these things. It's just fascinating. And to think that people hundreds of years ago were also asking the same dumb questions, being like, wait, why does this thing do this? And why do we just accept that? People throughout time have always been interested in those things and wanting to know more.
They were probably freaking out about solar eclipses. I would love to know what people hundreds of years ago thought when there was a total eclipse. Like I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what they thought. Probably something about, I don't know, gods or something, but it is
Yeah.
interesting to think about.
Probably thought the world was ending. I would, honestly, if I
Before
had no
that,
idea.
yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that ascribed to comets. A lot of people thought, like, this is way back, that comets would bring omens or spiritual effects. And it's actually why there were a lot of early catalogs of stuff in space, was people trying to make note of things that looked like comets but weren't actually comets. So when people proclaim that they had found a new comet, they could actually check and see if it is a new comet or
That's
something that people had
wild.
known
I didn't
about.
know that.
Yeah, people thought they would bring good luck or bad luck or something. So a lot of those old
Yeah.
astronomers were comet hunters trying to find comets.
That's funny. It's like storm chasers, but with comets. Isn't Halley's Comet one that you hear about all the time because it was super significant?
With Halley's Comet, it's a short period one, so it recurs often, whereas some of the other ones recur every several thousand years. Where Halley's Comet is interesting is the dude, Edmund Halley, actually made a prediction of when it would come back using Newton's laws at the time. It was one of the first, like, I'm going to predict something using Newton's laws and see if it happens. And I believe, I should probably Google this to make sure, but I believe he ended up dying before it came back. But it
Oh.
did come back, and then it was pretty much exactly as he predicted. It was an actual experimental way to test Newton's laws.
Who was the guy? This might be a reach. Like, I don't know if I'm just making this up in my brain, but I know we learned some whole story about a dinner party, and it either had to do with his nose or his bladder. I don't remember, but there was something. Do you know what I'm talking about? Am I being crazy?
Tycho Brahe, I believe.
Yes. Yes.
So, Tycho Brahe, there are conspiracies that he was murdered because he wouldn't give a lot of data to Johannes Kepler. And part of it is because his death is extraordinarily odd. He was like at some royal or noble dinner, and it was considered disrespectful to leave to use the bathroom.
Oh
And
my
yeah, his
God.
bladder just like exploded at that table, and he ended up dying. I don't know. I wasn't alive in like the 1600s, 1700s, but that seems a pretty whack way to die to me.
Yeah, I just feel like our professors would love to share that kind of weird information. It's like the astronomy lore that most people don't know, but it kept things interesting amidst all the math.
There was something up with his nose, though. Like, I think he was like missing part of it or something. There was definitely something about his nose. I think he lost
I think
it
so.
in
I
like
swear
a
he had like a
fight.
golden nose or a bronze nose or something. Like, I swear to
That'd be
God.
cool.
I think you're right, but the thing I remember about him is he has like the craziest mustache. This is worth the share, let me say.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, look at this thing.
Oh.
That thing's
Yeah.
crazy.
Oh yeah.
It's like the
Oh
Lorax.
my
Yeah. Look at them nose.
God. The Lorax
There
was modeled
it is,
after.
apparently.
What happened to his nose? Was it, I feel like it was like
Is
a
that the
something
man with the
battle,
golden
like
nose?
a duel or something. A sword fight, whatever they did.
Oh yeah, it says he lost. This is from Wikipedia, so hopefully this is right. But Tygo lost part of his nose in a sword duel with fellow Danish
Literally, that's what they
noblemen, and his third cousin. His third cousin cut his nose off.
That's
Two had a drunkenly quarrel. Or the oh, this is great. The two had a drunkenly quarrel over who was the superior mathematician at
my
an
God.
engagement party.
Okay,
That's
Conrad,
great.
Kevin, get to it.
Oh my God. Can you imagine, like, back in those days, you're just drunk and instead of yelling at someone, you're like, let's duel. Like,
Yeah. Oh, I can solve this equation better than you can. Oh yeah? Let's duel.
oh
As
my
if that
God.
would settle it, right? Like to settle who's the better mathematician, let's whack at each other with swords.
Perfect solution.
So, for the eclipse this year, do you guys have plans to observe it? What are you planning on doing? Anyone have anything
Yes,
special?
definitely do. So Burlington is also in the path of totality. The only problem is it's like always cloudy here. So my plan is to check the weather at like 5 a.m. and then drive somewhere else if Burlington's supposed to be cloudy. I took the day off of work well in advance, obviously. And my plan is just to go to a field. I have a solar filter for my telescope, so I'm gonna be using that. And then I obviously got the eclipse glasses and whatnot, but I'm planning on finding a field and having a party in the field watching the telescope. Heck yeah.
Wait, that's so fun. A field party. I love that.
Field party. Yeah, it's gonna be epic.
I would come to your field party if I was anywhere nearby. I'm gonna try to put these up.
Well, who knows? I might have to drive to Ohio if it's cloudy in Vermont.
Yeah, see, I literally can't see anything. So that's probably good. That means these will work for the actual clips. Grace, that's so fun. What about you guys? Kevin, are you based in New York right now?
Yeah, I'm in the city, so I think Path of Totality isn't in like till Albany, Buffalo. And that's hours away from me, so
Yeah, that's far.
I don't think I'll be able to see anything of it. But then again, I haven't really looked at the map.
You should still be able to see a good percentage of it, or you could drive to Burlington.
Yeah, with my now recently acquired learner's permit,
Yeah, exactly.
I'm getting up
Wait! Oh my
there.
God, that is so exciting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Just learning how to
One
drive
step closer
now.
to the road. It's going to be far away for me to get there too. I'm down in Delaware. So I don't have plans to do anything, but I don't know. There's still some time.
There's time
So,
to buy a plane ticket to Burlington.
bro, I'm a theorist. I don't like to look at things. I like to just do things on my computer. As far as I'm concerned, stars don't exist outside of my lap.
I'm just like not even gonna entertain that.
No, I'll see. There's still time.
All of our professors were cool in their own way, but it was a really cool opportunity to get to hear about the different things they were working on, specifically Nielsen.
Dr. Nielsen.
Yeah, because he was working on a very cool project when we were all in his class.
What do I remember about Dr. Nielsen? Nielsen was our mechanics professor. The one memory that sticks out was in freshman year when I had a question, and this was like what? 2 weeks into freshman year, like fall semester, never interacted with him, right? I would just come into class, take my notes, leave. No big deal. I had a question. This is the first time I ever had a question. I'm like, okay, well, let me go up and ask him, you know, ask the professor. So I go up and I intend to say, Dr. Nielsen, I have a question. Like, can you help me, right? Instead, what comes out of my mouth is I turn around and I say, yo. I just say, yo. And I don't follow it up with, like, Dr. Nielsen. Like, yo, Dr. Nielsen. I just say, yo. And he just turns around instinctively. I'm like, why would you turn around? Please don't turn around. He probably didn't work on it for like a while for that, to be honest. So yeah, he had that project, a big group of other astrophysicists, astronomers, like within NASA, creating the first quote-unquote photo of the black hole. But yeah, that was sick. That made headlines everywhere, essentially. I remember it being like on every Villanova newspaper front page, and they had the model of the black hole. So seeing that was like really cool. I don't know how many years went into just even that, like planning it, bringing every scientist in the community, seeing his name get announced. I felt pretty proud for him because I'm like, dude, you must have had so many sleepless nights trying to figure this out. I don't know if I can curse on your podcast, but I take the
liberty. It's fine. You're
cut that out if you want. And you got published on like NASA's IG page. You're going to get so many followers. Like, come on.
That's what he's after.
The picture was going viral. And then people started making it into a meme. I'm like, of course people can't resist. I saw one that was making it into like Pikachu's face or something. And then, you know, we had people like Maloney who were just randomly the coolest person ever and would drop that he had a terrace apartment in Paris, France that overlooks the Eiffel Tower. And we're just like, why are you here? Why are you with us if you have that? I would be there if I were you.
There was also that time, I forget who it was, it could have very well been me, where we were talking to Dr. Guinan about rings. And do any of you remember who did not think that Neptune had rings and thought he was joking?
It was me, Grace. It was me.
And then he was like, I discovered them. And you're like, no. Like, no, Neptune doesn't have rings.
No, it was humiliating because we were all trying to cram before the test. We had all this stuff written out on the board. And I think Ariana was like, okay, which ones have rings? What am I missing? I had honestly no idea. Meanwhile, this man who probably devoted his life's work to discovering this is just sitting there like chuckling softly, like, this girl's never going to make it.
He said all this crazy stuff all the time. So it was hard to tell if he was joking or not, but it was funny.
That was a low point for me.
It's okay. We've all had our moments.
I feel somewhat vindicated that one of us made it through because I know they were betting against us from the beginning because we were blonde. What's
up with that? Yeah.
Still infuriates me, but you know what? It's okay. Connor's blonde too. And he's like the smartest person I know.
Well, I am blonde, but I don't know about the second one.
Please enjoy a short interlude about us playing Manhunt, the game, inside of one of the oldest buildings at Villanova, which is actually where the observatory used to be located. Now it is atop the science building, and as you'll hear, all of us worked at the observatory at one point, but this was a funny memory.
There were actively lots of classes going on at the same time.
As we were like sprinting
down the hallway. And we would just run past them.
Yeah, because we did that like pretty early in the night. It was 8 o'clock and there were still night classes that were like going on.
I think I hid in a trash can for a while. I'm pretty sure I did that.
Wait, you did. I remember. It was like a recycling bin or something.
You did too. You definitely did it too.
Yeah. I just remember at one point we were in that weird section that connected the monastery to Tolentheim. I was so creeped out.
It's a creepy building.
Isn't that where the old telescope was? Or the old observatory or something?
Yeah, and so. Like blocked off so no one can get to it anymore.
It's also the building where the floors don't match up, right?
Yeah.
One side has like 4 floors and there's 3 or something like that. It's just a weird half floor at one point.
It's always crazy to me how many stars we were able to see on Villanova's campus, even though we were like semi-close to Philly. Because the light pollution was like pretty bad in the area, but still at the observatory, we were able to see like a significant amount of stuff.
I forgot that we had to do this, that we actually had to work in the observatory as freshmen. When the kids would come to like, I say kids, they're probably older than us at the time, to like do their astronomy requirement and having to try to convince them that something they were seeing was actually cool when It was either the moon, which was kind of cool, or just like a bunch of little dots. I'm like, oh yeah.
I mean, we thought it was cool. I don't think anyone else thought it was cool, but like
Okay.
literally, it would be like frat bros showing up. They have to do their one credit and get it, signed off by us, and they were just very uninterested and we're like, that's Jupiter.
Well, so I don't know if you guys can see this photo, but it's like our us as like freshmen.
Oh yeah.
Damn.
Wow.
Zoom in on my hair because I'm pretty sure there's a piece.
Yeah.
Oh,
Ooh.
your solar flare is what you called
Yeah. Oh yeah.
it. Yeah, literally, Maloney was going in with the Photoshop and he like smoothed out everybody's acne, but then he left my one hair and we played Manhunt in Toll Time.
That was the
Oh
best
my
night
God.
ever.
I think we should talk about that because I just found this picture of Grace just like under the chairs
Yeah.
in the Mendel lecture hall, and also this thing that you used to draw on the board,
Oh, I
Connor.
still
Where?
do
Oh my
that.
God.
That hasn't ended. Continue to you, Delaware.
Some things never change.
Yeah, that was great, that manhunt thing. What was funny, we did it twice. We did it in Mendel once, Science Building, and then in Tollentheim, which I don't even what even actually goes on in Tollentheim.
The psychology department is in there, but it's kind of just like a random catch-all for liberal arts and science classes.
So, I think for my gumption story, I think it's my decision to leave New York and go to Villanova. At that time in high school, I guess my last few years in high school, I started formulating or started floating the idea, entertaining the idea that I wanted to pursue astronomy. And in New York, at least in the city, there's no college that offers that as a major. Maybe like physics, that's as close as it gets. And that's just like the CUNYs around. There's a couple of state colleges or universities that offered it, but I just wanted to get out of my comfort zone at the time. I wanted to see what else was out there besides New York. New York is great, but I want to see other states. And I remember when I went to Villanova, before that I had gone to a couple other colleges and I didn't wasn't really my vibe. I didn't feel comfortable there. But once I got to Nova, I sat on a few orientations. I felt right at home. Oddly enough to say, a place that I've never been to was already like envision it being my home for the next 4 years at that point. And I'm glad I did it. I don't regret anything. Even if I'm not pursuing astronomy now as a career, my takeaway is that because of those courses, I know I want to do data analytics as a career choice. I met really close friends over there that I know my friendships are going to last a lifetime. I recently met up with one of my old friends from high school. I consider him a brother, right? When I was telling him about, basically the last 2 years of my life, how that went and all that, planning on changing industries, but within the same career field that I want. And I was telling him about, yeah, I'm having the job market is pretty effed in the air right now, so I'm not really doing so well with all these job apps. And he told me this quote. One of his friends told him his quote, and that he was saying that whenever he has a friend, a close friend of his, or someone that he knows even, that gets a job, I guess in the same field or same industry that he wants, to him that just means that God is in the area. And to me, that quote really struck out because I'm like, oh, like I really resonated with it. I'm not a sucker for quotes like that, but that quote was really nice. I'm not gonna lie, that went really hard. And yeah, I think that's just kind of what I'm like. Kind of my belief right now. I'm seeing a lot of my friends winning whatever it is, whatever job they want. So yeah, that's what I think that's my story.
I love that, Kevin. And I totally resonate. The job industry is so messed up right now. And you want to be happy for people. And I think a trademark of being a good friend is still being happy for other people, even when you're struggling. But that's such a good way to put it because it's like, okay, your time is yet to come.
I was really thinking about what my gumption moment slash story is. And yeah, I feel like mine's not really astro related, even though that's what I do. Being in an astrophysics PhD program is a lot. But the thing I would say is equally as my an equal commitment as astrophysics is the band I'm in, so Wickham Falls. Not to shamelessly plug that, but
Say it louder so people can hear
it's Wickham Falls.
it. There we go.
Everyone should listen to that on Spotify.
Yes,
Make me
I'll
happy.
link it in the description.
And follow on Instagram.
Yes. Yes. It's a lot of work doing physics here. But yeah, I feel a lot of people might have just kind of given up on it. And I'm not, fully, the band is going to work. It's going to be my life. But it's something I really care about and really want to work. I'm not going to give up on it. And so there's a lot of really long drives. I drove all the way to Yale from Delaware to play a show and all the way back in one day just to play an hour-long show at some bar in Yale. And yeah, I was pretty tired, but it's all worth it just for the hope that it could work out. And it's when I play live and I play music and write music and I hear it recorded, it's all makes it so worth it to put the time and effort into trying to make that work.
I have to say, it was so amazing to see you perform because obviously I've known you for so many years now, and I've known you in an academic and social setting. But Grace and I were just like, this is his element. It was so clear that you were having a lot of fun and you just were totally in that stage mindset in this random basement in Philadelphia that we were. Where are we right now?
Yeah, it was a
Go ahead.
crazy coincidence that all of that worked out. But very nice. It was very great to see you guys there, and I'm very happy that you guys
It wasn't a
went through all that
coincidence.
just
We
to come.
traveled so we traveled from
Oh, you
far
traveled all the way
distances
to
just to
Philly
be with
just
the
to see me.
stars. No, actually though, we were tossing around the idea of coming to Philly, and then when we saw on Brooke's story that you guys were performing, we're like, no, we have to. When on earth
Yeah.
are we all going to be in the same place? So it
It was a
wasn't
fellow
a total accident, just saying.
well, I'm very happy you guys came. Thank you very much.
Connor, thank God your band is good. I remember you telling me about your band in freshman year.
Yeah, I
And I was
remember
like, dog, if his band sucks, I'm gonna be like, yeah, it's good, bro. It's good. But
that.
no, I heard a couple of songs on it. That's when I started getting into, well, I don't know how you would describe what genre you would describe your music, alternative or indie, or
Yeah,
I don't know
probably.
what you would describe it as, but that's just the type of music I was getting into at the time. And so your band did a good job of diving me further into that genre. So I think you'll make it out the hood with this one.
I
To write your own
remember
music.
when someone told Andre, Andre's one of our professors, just
Oh,
like to my total embarrassment. And then for him further to be like, well, now we need to play it. And he forced someone to play it while we were at the table. And I was sitting there like, oh my God. Yeah.
to all seven of
I
us in that class. Yeah. That's the biggest life change that I can think of that I felt was pretty bold was about a week and a half or 2 weeks after graduating college. I moved to a state, Vermont. Literally knew no one. I vaguely knew someone from a random high school camp. But other than that, I knew no one in Vermont. I was completely switching career paths. So I studied astro, but then I decided I wanted to pursue medicine. So I had to completely change career paths. Yeah, I was doing those two things and it felt like I was just completely uprooting my life. And it was kind of a lot, a big transition. But I am so grateful that I did. And I know that year after college can be pretty challenging. So if anyone's listening and about to graduate college, I hear you. I've been there. So it's a tough year, but ultimately you got to do what is best for your future. And that's what I decided to do. I'm happy with that. And I guess just relating back to Astro, I was just thinking about this when we were talking about Green Bank. Is one thing that I've been doing while I've been living here is using Astro in different ways. I do stuff like astrophotography now. But a motto that I always live by now is look up at the night sky. Like when you step outside a building, just look up. It's so much better to look up than to be looking at your phones or looking down at the ground. And it just reminds me of all the work that I did back at Villanova and how big and awesome the universe is, even if I'm not studying it anymore. So that's my gumption story.
Vermont very much suits you. It's so fun for me to get to see all your adventures hiking and skiing and enjoying a place that is now your home that is not where you're from. I'm going to show you guys something. I have something right here.
What are you guys laughing about? You think you're so subtle, but you're not.
I have.
Oh my gosh.
Oh,
It's a mouse pad,
wow.
and I don't think they make these anymore because no one really uses mouse pads, but it's the mural that's outside of the department and it says, "The sky has never been the limit." And that reminded me of when you were saying, "Look up, Grace."
Yeah.
I always loved that quote.
That's such a relic that you have there. I love it.
Speaking of Vermont, I'm surprised Grace didn't notice I'm representing.
So I was actually going to try to convince all of you to come to Vermont for the eclipse. So Connor, I think you need to now that you're wearing that.
What advice would you give, either satirical or serious, a first-timer eclipse viewer?
The one thing I can say, I never saw a total solar eclipse. And those are, from what I've seen videos of, are awesome. What I would say, though, is get the glasses. There are other tricks. Like, I remember when it happened a long time ago. I want to say I was in high school when it happened. And there's a partial one, and we had glasses, but there's also this cereal box trick or something like that. It's just not that cool when you do it that way. So I would definitely try to get the glasses if you can, and probably get them early, because I remember that was the thing with the last one. They sold out so quickly. But yeah, the other methods, you can see it, but it's not going to be as cool as direct viewing. And then you don't look at it with your eyes.
The more dangerous part is leading up to totality. Because then it's just like you're staring at this super bright, powerful fireball, essentially. That's the dangerous part. You would probably be fine just looking at the outer atmosphere, the corona of the sun during the totality, but that's only a few minutes. So the danger is that people get antsy for totality and take their glasses off before that, and then they're staring at the sun. And then that's what causes the eye damage.
You can look at a total eclipse. Like, once it actually happens, you're fine.
Yeah. And that's like for just like a couple minutes too, that it's actually like that. And it's blocking out so much of the light source. It's really leading up to it that you need to be careful. And afterwards, it will randomly get dark on you if you're just driving. But
there's got to be some people that like that do not have any clue that this is coming and are going to be driving and be like, why is it dark at 2 p.m.?
Like, what did I just experience?
And there you have it, folks. That was episode 31. I literally could not resist the temptation to use "it is rocket science" in the title because I can't even tell you the amount of times I wanted to say that while I was actually studying rocket science. Huge shout out to Kevin, Connor, and Grace for being on this episode. We had like a 4-hour Zoom call and it was such a blast, but really I'm just so grateful because they are all across the country doing really cool things, and the fact that they wanted to share their memories and wisdom with Gumption warms my heart. Also, I'm a huge believer that astronomy should be very accessible to people, even if you're not super interested in science. There's lots of cool facts about cosmology that can really inform the way you think about how you exist in the world. Make sure you guys check out Connor's band, Wickham Falls. I will tag their Instagram account and link their Spotify profile in the episode description, as well as our Instagram link in bio, where you can always find guests and their businesses or their products from past episodes. Also, check out the accompanying playlist and Letterboxd movie recommendation list for this episode. And stay following our Instagram account at GumptionPod for updates, giveaways, and more. Finally, if you're listening on Spotify, use the interact feature to comment on this episode. As always, I'm Lil. Love you guys. Bye. Bye.